Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
You're back in the House of Mystery, and I'm Al Warren. And on the other side of the country, we've got Mr. David Nor'easter Martino. We're keeping you Nor'easter for the whole week. Next week, that's you'll right. be back to normal. You'll be Nor Rainey.
Okay, that's perfect.
Nor Rainey, that's a good name. Rose yeah. Rainey. I'll call you Rose Rainey. Rain Rose. Randy Rose. No,
I'm taking it.
You're taking it. Well,
man of a thousand names.
Yeah, something fresh every day. Well, when you're a serial killer on the run, you need to have names.
That's right.
To keep it going here. You know,
so I don't want to be caught.
Yeah. And no more, you're not allowed out in the buffet anymore after that big scene you caused yesterday.
Oh.
So when you take all the steaks. Yeah, you take all the steaks, and then everyone throwing it, 40 of them throwing their chairs and everything, and you just sneak out. You probably put them all in your bag and left.
I did. What, do you have me on video?
I do. I'm going to sell it.
This didn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, you know, yeah. I'll tell you. Put you in a restaurant. Can't take you on a plane. Can't take anything with you.
No.
Just behave yourself. I don't know what your wife's going to do with you. I'll tell you.
I don't know.
we're going to give her a gift for free psychological help. Three times a week.
For living with me, yeah.
Yeah, living with you. Poor cat. Your cat's probably gone nuts, too, by now.
The cat is pretty nuts, yeah.
Yeah, it's walking around.
I have that effect on people and animals.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. I don't know. Well, now, Tim, it's been quite a week this week. I'll tell you, quite an array of writers this week all over the place.
Absolutely.
Yeah, now today we are kind of getting into the, I guess, dark fantasy, and we've got a little bit of horror here, and we've got a little bit of everything. So we'll talk to the author here. Now, the book we're talking about is A Demon's Trade, Damned If She Does, Book 1, and the authors are guests, Catherine Hudson. Thank you for being here.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. It's always good to have interesting writers on and stuff.
I'm glad I can be interesting.
Well, yeah. Well, if you're not, we will make you interesting.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, that's what we do. You've written a few books now, so you've done a few things out here. And what kind of writer do you consider yourself? Do you consider yourself a cult, horror, dark fantasy? Like, where do you see yourself?
If I had to pick one, I would say it's dark fantasy, and then that's the overarching umbrella. So there is some occult, there is some horror, there is a lot of humor as well. And I recently have branched into urban fantasy. So pulling all those things together, it's kind of a mashup.
It's good. It's interesting. It's kind of life, because you meet all these types of people. You have all these experiences in your life. They're not all these, you know, such a variety. But where do you think that comes from? Where does like the horror, dark fantasy sort of side of you come from? Is it something you've been into since you can remember, or is this something that, who knows?
I have been into dark fantasy and horror for, yes, as long as I can remember. I started reading Stephen King when I was 10. So, of course, no adults in my life were aware of this at the time, but I started then. And for me, which is actually, I love that you asked this question, because I have come up with an answer for it the last couple of months. For me, it was a way for me to make sense of a lot of the darker things in my own life. Growing up from a very young age, I, you know, struggled a lot to find a place of belonging and sort of, you know, light and fun and happiness. And I think diving into that darkness made me feel not so alone. So at this point, you know, I write dark fiction and more generally, you know, dark fantasy, because I do love fantasy, and it's fun to create worlds and make things up and, you know, make the impossible possible. And now I dive into that darkness as a way to hopefully offer other people who are going through similar, you know, dark times in their lives, or have a chance to make sense of those, and also illuminate the dark spaces in order for the light to be there.
You say you put humor to it. So is the reason that you've got the humor in it is to kind of, is it kind of your way of saying, well, you know, there might be some dark things you're dealing with, but in a way we've got to kind of laugh at it because, you know, life is life.
That is exactly right. You know, I have a lot of people ask me after speaking to me how I can be such a lighthearted person and laugh as much as I do, and then write the dark things that I write. And it's because, you know, I think for me, first of all, having a sense of humor, and initially it started as a very self-deprecating sense of humor, was a way for me to deal with awkwardness and discomfort. And I think at this point, you know, as much as the darkness can bring people together through shared experiences, so can laughter and so can humor. And nobody wants just constant awfulness all the time, right? If we can't laugh at some of the more absurd situations and scenarios, in my opinion, you know, there's not much left.
I make fun of everything in life because none of it's really that serious. It is and it isn't. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
When you're putting yourself in, you know, if it comes from some of the dark things in your life or some of the things that bring on the darkness, is your writing kind of your way of dealing with it for yourself?
I think, you know, I can't be 100% certain, but based on the way that my life has changed over the last 10 plus years, I think that I have done the majority of the work in dealing with, you know, dark times in my own life and moving past them and learning how to integrate more light and joy and happiness. But I do still draw from my experiences when I write these things. So I'm not writing, you know, dark, violent, explosive adventures, to process my own pain or, you know, work through those things on my own. I did a lot of that already. Now it's just fun for me.
It's an interesting process. So each book you go that you complete and you write through your life so far, did you find that each book sort of changes you somewhat after you finished it?
There's always a little bit of of change. Of course, completing a book, you know, is in and of itself a massive accomplishment. So, you know, anyone who writes and who has finished books and written them, I salute you, first of all. And, you know, it's a big deal. And more than anything, recently, I have found that whenever I finish a book, there's far more of myself injected into the characters and the situations than I ever expected, and that I ever, more than I ever intended, really. You know, I draw on my own experiences, and then I'll find myself really connecting with some of the more intense situations that I put my characters through on purpose, you know. So it does affect me that way. And when I finished my most recently completed series, Accessory to Magic, there was definitely a few tears just because it had drawn to a close, you know, fall in love so much with the characters and fall in love with them all over again when readers fall in love with them too. It's bittersweet. My newest series, Dandashi Does, is set in the same world. So I got to put myself back in that world, and I will be playing with some of the same characters, so it's not over yet.
Yeah, it's not over till Dave sings.
That's right.
It's quite a process when you go through this and putting out books and stuff like that. Do you feel a little bit vulnerable by sharing some of your own feelings and putting yourself into the character so much, like so much of your is shared by this? So it does it, especially when someone comes along and gives you like a 1-star or 2-star, or they don't like it and say something like nasty, you know, and stuff like that. Does it sort of kind of make you feel, ooh, you know, that meant a lot to me and I shared it. And now you come along and say, well, she can't write or something like that. Right. You know, I get those. I attack.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So does that kind of make you feel vulnerable, but just letting it out there?
You know, I really only had felt particularly vulnerable with actually one of my dystopian sci-fi books, the first one, because I had put so much of myself into that book, probably more than any of my others. And before that book released, this is Sleepwater Beat. It's the first book in the Blue Helix series. I had a little bit of a struggle with putting that book out there, and it was an unfounded fear. You know, I remember thinking, and probably even telling my husband at the time, like, oh, I can't put this out there. Everyone's going to know, everyone, the whole world is going to know that I wrote about me, and they're going to know all my secrets, and they're going to hate me. That book actually became an international bestseller almost immediately. So I didn't actually have anything to worry about, and no one has mentioned anything about my personal life through these books. So that was a big eye-opener for me. And I think that actually paved the way for me to be able to get so vulnerable over and over again with pretty much everything that I've written since then. I've heard many times from other authors as well, you know, you haven't made it until you get a good handful of those 1- and 2-star reviews, which, yeah. Yeah. You know, you can't please everybody. And that totally is valid. And I have no problem with it.
Well, you know, but that's all right. We'll get some one for you. We'll get some.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
That's what we do.
That's just what I need. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get it on. Come on, everyone. No, actually, so when you get to your new book, A Demon's Trade, now this is Damned If She Does Book 1. So this is part of a series. When you do a book like this and you have it kind of, you know, it's going to be part of a series here. You got to, you know, you're writing something. Are you already pre-planned? Do you know kind of how it's going to end? And even down book 2, 3, 4, do you kind of know in your mind right now, is it kind of outlined somewhere and you kind of know, well, this is where it begins, this is where it ends, and the books just take you there?
I do. I, until about a year and a half, oh no, yes, about a year and a half ago. I was 100% a pantser. I would never plan anything. I would, you know, I wouldn't even start writing a book until I had the beginning, middle, and end, and a few scenes, very few, percolating in my head for a little while, and I wouldn't even touch an outline or an abstract or anything. And that worked, but the process of writing itself was very slow for me, and compared to the amount of content that I'm producing now. I'm also a ghostwriter. I ghostwrite fiction as well. So I write quite a bit more than what is published out there under my name. So about a year and a half ago, I started to write very loose outlines, first for a series in general, and then for each specific book within that series. And I found that that helped me immensely with just the speed of writing. I didn't have to stop and think about where I was going next. I already had a very, very sparse blueprint. But I do know exactly where the Damned If She Does series is headed and where it's going to end. There are always so many surprises that pop up within the process. That's where I think the real magic is. I have never been able to write an incredibly detailed outline, you know, chapter by chapter. That also, I think, ruins the fun for me. But it's in the process of writing, and when I'm in that flow state, that all the really fun details just sort of pop up organically. And then, you know, at that point, I may add something that I had never intended to include, or may take it back to a point that I definitely knew I wanted within a specific book. But I always end up surprising myself with what actually gets written down and stays in each book, and the characters, more than anything else, surprise me.
Well, that's what I was going to ask too. You mentioned being, you know, writing from the seat of your pants, and I was just curious if you've ever had a character kind of just go off the rails and, you know, rebel against the plot, and did you have that happen, or are you more in control?
I'm definitely not in control. I would say I'm more of a facilitator. I think the biggest instance of a character just completely rebelling against me was in one of my earlier series that is not nearly as well known. I had a character in mind who I thought was going to be something of a villain, a treacherous character that turned against the main character, and instead, I ended up writing him because that's who he ended up being, as an old man in the middle of a love story. So that surprised me a lot, and he became, sort of a benevolent guide to the main character, and I had not intended for that to happen at all, but it worked out so much better for the story and so much better for the plot. And you know, a lot of the times, I have a feel of the main characters, you know, and where I would like to see them go and how they respond to certain situations. And I think most specifically the aspects of them that aren't broken, the struggles that they have and that darkness inside them, that's what I'm most in tune with. And everything else just kind of arises as I'm writing. So I get to meet them as they appear on the page, and then we keep going together from there. So I have also never mapped out a character or done character sketches. I've never written out magic systems or political systems or mapped out a world that I'm creating. It just shows up on the page when I'm writing it, so my readers meet these characters and discover these new places pretty much in the same way that I do when I'm writing them.
What do you consider your relationship with your characters? I ask that because a lot of fiction writers that we talk to will say, you know, give us descriptions of their characters as like their family or their children or things like that. How do you describe your characters?
I admire them in a lot of ways. And I write characters that is in my mind, in some ways are who I would like to be in certain situations. Most of my characters I would never actually want to meet in person, and I'm sure that we would hate each other. So, that, you know, I guess it's a love-hate relationship with my characters. Definitely not my family, definitely not my children. They can be prickly and they have a lot of redeeming qualities, and, no, that's an interesting question. I'm not sure if we would get along very well.
Well, I'm wondering, how do you experience your characters? Do you have an inner monologue? Can you hear your characters? Or is it more images and symbols that you're kind of transcribing as you're writing these books?
That's also a really good question. I would say that when I sit down and I really get into writing, it's more like I become my characters. So they're not me. They don't become me. That would make for probably very boring books, but, step into their shoes. And so it's more like I am watching a movie in my own head, and it all just comes out through my finger. So I have been tested with, you know, the typing test to see how fast you type. Yeah. I can type 110 words per minute when I'm when I'm transcribing something. Yeah. And that's very fast. My fingers move faster than my brain. So, I don't write that quickly when I'm, you know, actively creating. But that speed does allow me to basically just channel that playing movie in my mind that I see right down onto the page. And, you know, sometimes I even sit there and type with my eyes closed, and that the sentences actually, you know, turn out coherent. I have been playing piano since I was 5, so that muscle memory with fingers and knowing where keys are, both on a keyboard and on a piano, are very helpful. So I'm not thinking about actually writing. I'm in the story, and I am in my character's shoes, and I'm living it with them as it comes out.
You're in the book, The Demon's Trade, here. You're I guess your main character is Kelly Sullivan, is a bounty hunter, I believe, right?
Correct.
It's not like Dog the Bounty Hunter. This is more serious stuff here, you know. So, with Kelly, how do you describe Kelly? Like, who is Kelly Sullivan?
Kelly Sullivan is a half human, half Montauk, which is a creature race that I had created in the Accessory to Magic series. So, like I said, this is in the same world. And the human world, who doesn't know about magic or these magical creatures, think that she is a demon. They call her a demon. So, for all intents and purposes.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Callie is a half demon, and she comes from a childhood and a place where she was raised, trained, what's the word I'm looking for? Maybe in some ways brainwashed, coerced into being as terrible as she could possibly be. So Montags aren't great, to say the least. I would call them something of an evil race, or just incredibly sadistic, one or the other. And she is at a point in a demon's trade when we first meet her, where she's trying to branch out on her own and stop carrying the weight of, you know, a lot of torment and trauma from being raised by a father who is a demon. And her human side keeps her from completely succumbing to that darkness. But so she's trying to do the right thing. She's a bounty hunter of dark artifacts and cursed magic and netherwork. And she doesn't go after people. She goes after things and steals them so no one can use them. And that's her attempt to sort of redeem herself and also, you know, be the complete opposite of what she was raised to be.
Now, I'm just wondering, do you draw from, as you're creating these demon characters and some of the other stuff within the story, are you drawing from different mythologies, or is most of this coming directly from your own imagination?
On the surface level, I would say it comes directly from my own imagination. And then, of course, you know, demons are not from my own imagination, you know, so there are different legends and lore and mythology, of course, different fantasy worlds. I also read a lot of fantasy, among other things. So I think it's whatever I can pull from the primordial soup of my brain and put my own spin on it. So, you know, in this series, there are, you know, fae and orcs and trolls and sort of the more, I don't want to say generic, but more easily recognizable races and creatures. And then there are characters like the Umbal. Callie's best friend Heath is an Umbal, and that is a race that I created. And they basically walk and operate and live and fight interdimensionally. There's a lot of weird sci-fi stuff in there too. So I like to bring in a little bit of the familiar, you know, something that fantasy readers will recognize. I don't have to create an entirely new world with entirely new races, because it is urban fantasy, right? So it draws on what we know in the real world, and it puts those fantastical elements into the everyday and the mundane. But it gets boring if I don't get to make something up out of nothing. So I like to stick in things that nobody has ever seen before. At least I hope, because to me they're brand new.
Well, you know, when you're writing and putting together a story like this, there's a lot of action and there's lots of stuff going on here. Do you have an underlying subtext or something that you hope, some meaning that you hope people get out of each book?
Yes. You know, every book has a little bit of a different message, of course, along the same themes as the others in a specific series. I do try to insert one message that I hope my readers continue to pick up on, and that I know my current readers now have seen and appreciate, is the idea that you know, no matter what kinds of mistakes we've made or how badly we may have screwed something up, or how much we may have hurt ourselves or others, that those decisions and the mistakes that we've made, the things we've done, don't define who we are, and they don't dictate the choices that we make for our futures moving forward. And that was a big theme for me in my life. That's important for me to put into my work, and that's part of why I am so drawn to the darkness and why I love playing in that realm, is because there are a lot of really great lessons and redemption stories that can come out of it. Let's see. This year, in July this year, I will have 12 years clean in recovery from heroin addiction. So that was, I think, probably my biggest, darkest place. And that message was something that took me quite a while to discover and then, you know, fully acknowledge and accept. And it helped me get to where I am now. So I really do strive to, you know, bring that message into pretty much everything I write, because I know how helpful it is.
Well, congrats on that.
Yeah, now, thank you.
You're very welcome. You've written a lot. You've done a ton of books. I'm just wondering if you've noticed any specific motifs, any recurrent themes, and if you've put them in, and if so, if you've put them in consciously, or if stuff like that has come out unconsciously and you've noticed it.
Yeah, so, you know, what I just mentioned, that's the biggest one, and that is very, very conscious. And, you know, so I prefer to write and work with, you know, broken characters, people or creatures who have been through those dark places, and now they're trying to figure out how to deal with it. So there's a lot of redemption story themes in there, and they're not always obvious, and they can get a little muddy sometimes, because I also very much enjoy sticking my characters into impossible situations and seeing if they can claw their way out of them. Most of the time they manage it. And you know, I have a lot of fun. I guess maybe I have a bit of a sadistic streak too, who knows. But that's, you know, I guess it revolves around the same themes of, you know, bad choices don't make us bad people, and then also a lot of not caring what anyone else thinks. So that's what comes to mind in answer to your question.
You know, do you yourself have any outside inspirations, as in other writers or screenplays or what music or what kind of influences you or helps you kind of put together books in your mind?
Yeah. So like I said, I have been reading Stephen King since I was 10. He's coming up, right?
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of his Dark Tower series. I've read it 10 times so far and plan to continue rereading it. Yeah. Bit of a Dark Tower nerd that way. And so that brings a lot of inspiration to me, not so much in that it affects my writing or my characters, but that kind of it's very dark, obviously. It's Stephen King, and it's also, you know, a mashup of fantasy and horror and Western and all kinds of fun stuff. And so I take some influence, I think, from that. And Jacqueline Carey and her Cushiel's Legacy series hit me in a lot of the feels. And I really enjoy what she's done with that series. And I think also, you know, I can't write with any music that has lyrics in it, so I find a lot of epic movie scores to play. And sometimes when I'm working on the really dark stuff, I'll dive into Norse metal. And that keeps me in the right headspace. I do have playlists for different series that I'm working on, and they're all different depending on the feel and the genre and the tone I'm trying to go for. I used to be able to write, this was when I was in high school and college. I wrote to Metallica a lot, and I can't do that anymore. Words distract me, sounds distract me. The sound of my 5-year-old or my dogs or a door shutting in the house distracts me. So I always have headphones in, and I always have just purely instrumental music playing. I think that really helps me tap into the flow and the process of writing, and I don't get my words mixed up with whatever may be playing in my ears. I like really intense music too.
Yeah. So you write with a structure, or like, can you sit down and go, well, I'm writing 9 to 5 Monday to Friday, or can you set aside time like that and plan it, or do you actually have to be in a certain mood in order to write?
I used to have to be in a certain mood in order to write. And there's a period where I didn't touch a word of fiction for 4 years because I just, I wouldn't let myself get in the mood. But now it is, you know, like I said, I also ghostwrite fiction, and then I have my own books. So writing is my full-time job. This is what I do. My husband is a stay-at-home dad. He's homeschooling our 5-year-old. So my schedule may be a little crazy. I wake up at 3:30 every morning, which is actually, I have found, the best time for me to start the creative process and get into the zone. And I actually started doing that when my daughter was very young and my husband was still working, and I needed time to write. And I loved it so much that I kept doing it. So I wake up at 3:30. I take the first hour of the day to wake up, do some journaling, meditating, all that fun stuff, you know, and it's still dark outside and my dogs aren't even awake, so nobody needs me for anything. And then I start writing at 4:30, and basically right now I'm working on the 12-hour days, 5 days a week, and I take lots of breaks throughout the day. Go for walks, and I'm not a going to the gym kind of person. I'm very much a homebody. So we have a gym in our basement. Use that. I do write in sprints. I've been doing that for about 3 years and it's very helpful. So right now I will set a timer for 50 minutes, write straight through. And when that timer goes off, even if I'm in the middle of like the most intense scene, I force myself to get up and I stop. I take a 10-minute break, you know, grab a snack, refill my water bottle. Maybe I'll read something that's entirely different than what I'm writing. I can't ever read the same genre as what I'm currently writing at the time. And then I get back at it. And that's my day. I usually write between 13 and 15,000 words a day. And that's my work day. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Now, besides the new book, The Demon's Craft, what one book would you tell people to read? Like someone that's never heard of you before, never read any of your books, and if there was one book that you would choose to give them to kind of get the feel for your writing, what would it be?
Mm. That depends on how brave the person is.
Well, someone like Dave. Dave, he's really brave. He's you know, martial arts, drinks whiskey, he can do it all.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, he can do it all. You know, he's
gone. I listen to metal too. So.
Yeah.
So oh, perfect. Yes. Then I then I would tell Dave in this instance to pick up Sleepwater Beat. That's the first book in the Blue Helix series. And that is LGBTQ plus dystopian sci-fi, which is an eerily timed parallel to, so I published Sleepwater Beat in 2018. I had finished writing it in 2016, right before my daughter was born. And it was a very presciently timed release for, you know, what the world and our country was going through at the time. And that one I like to describe as the girl with the dragon tattoo meets X-Men in a very strange, not too distant future dystopia where certain people have developed a superpower with the spoken word. So a certain kind of storytelling elicits physical, visceral responses in people who hear it. Could be used as a weapon, could be used as a shield. The main character gets caught up in the midst of kind of, you know, a rebellion, guerrilla warfare, perhaps. There are lots of guns and explosions and whiskey. So that would be a very metal book as well. And that was my first international bestseller. And then its sequel, Sleepwater Static, was my other international bestseller. And that was also released. It was written before, certain political shifts around the world in 2020, and tackles a lot of the same issues that we were all going through at the time, which was, it was odd. That's an odd place to be when your books tell the future, which I know I'm not the only author who has experienced this, but and it's those books are not for the faint of heart. There's much less humor in those than in the Accessory to Magic series or Damned If She Does, but I have a real fondness for those books because they have a lot to say.
And Dave would like those, you know, bedtime meeting with the cat.
Totally.
Fireplace on and on the side. And,
that's right.
And the cat all cuddled, and then he reads to his cat.
That's great. My
he's such a nice man. He really is. we need more people like that. Take care of their animals, you know.
Yeah.
Now, do you like interacting with people on social media? And do you have a website? How do people find you?
Yes to all of those questions. I do enjoy interacting on social media. So that way I can be found on Facebook at Catherine Hudson Fiction, and Instagram at Catherine Hudson Fiction. I have yet to fully crack the code on Twitter, but I do have a Twitter account that's at Exquisitely Dark, and TikTok at Exquisitely Dark. I'm trying to get better about making videos. And my website is CatherineHudsonFiction.com. I always love getting emails, especially from readers. So, you know, you can always reach me by email. It's author@CatherineHudsonFiction.com. I'm in all those places.
Great. We'll put all that up on our website as well, so people can find you with one click and all that. You know, it'd be good.
Perfect.
How was the COVID on your writing? Did COVID affect you and your ability to write or anything like that?
In the beginning, there was a little bit of trepidation, I'll say. Because, you know, when nobody knew what was going on, nobody knew what was happening. But I consider myself very fortunate to not have been affected nearly as much as so many other people by the pandemic. I may have actually written more during it. So, you know, I'm really, really fortunate to have already been writing full time. Before any of COVID came about. And I really am the kind of person who prefers to be at home in my house and not leave. My husband runs all of our errands and does the shopping, and I like to stay home. So it really didn't change my life very much at all.
Well, it's fortunate. Well, some people it affected, you know, the emotion of it. And
absolutely.
So what do you got coming up next? What's on the shelf now?
Coming up next, well, book two of the Damned If She Does series of The Demon's Craft is available to pre-order now. That comes out on February 22nd. And I am continuing The Damned If She Does series. That is my focus right now. That'll be 8 books. So there's quite a bit more to come. Yeah.
How long does it take you to put together a book?
Well, when I am ghostwriting for clients and, you know, working with various schedules, right now I'm writing 4 books a month for clients, and then my own books usually take about 6 weeks because I'm writing other books as well at the same time. So it's very fast for me.
Wow, that's crazy. But hey,
I know, yeah. I'm crazy.
Well, I mean, hey, you're in good company. So excellent. Well, it's been a real pleasure. So now the book we're suggesting everyone buy, of course, is The Demon's Craft. Book one is out now. Book two is coming. You know, it never ends. So our guest is the author of these great books, Catherine Hudson. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Alan, Dave.
Thanks, Catherine.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Hold up.
What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.